Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Hour two of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew, Sam's Justice. No justice, no peace. He's under the weather. Nick Zerwas, ably filling his role this morning.
What's happening? Yeah, poor John has a scratchy throat.
Right.
So they brought me in, yeah. So this is going great.
We're brilliant over here. We left off in the top five talking about this El Alamo bar that the city of St. Paul is revoking its license after several violent incidents. Lawyer extraordinaire, friend of the show, Jeff O'Brien, is mentioned in the story as the representation for the bar, and he has called in. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning.
So you're quoted in the story saying that you think the city is misplacing the blame for different issues in the community. I don't know a ton about this area. I don't know anything about this bar. But it does seem to me, just gut reaction, that if you've got a part of town where there's a lot of violence, simply closing down a bar isn't really going to fix the problem.
Well, that's exactly right. And just to clarify, you know, there's a point in the story to talk about the number of police calls over the course of the last few years. There was one violation, I think, some years ago, but this was what we're dealing with here. This violation was like the only one that actually, the bar actually had a license violation. So bad stuff can happen at your bar, but if you're doing things the right way, you're not the one getting the blame for it. So it's a little bit misleading in the story that the notorious bar that's having all these issues with its, with legal issues. The bar was on a second violation. The typical penalty for this is a $2,000 penalty. There's a $1,000 penalty. The city asked for an upward departure for $2,000 and a 10-day suspension. We fought that, and unfortunately we lost at the administrative hearing. And then the city council just decided, we're just going to revoke the license. Now, the council person for this area, Rebecca Naker, is a former board member of the Westside Community Organization. I bet you can't guess which organization was pushing for the bar's license to be revoked.
Yeah.
So this is what happens when you get community organizers as your city council instead of business people.
Jeff,
do things like this.
There's some type of appeal process for that license revocation, correct?
There's an appeal to the district court. We're also looking at other possible options. You mentioned, Nick, about the loss of value of the property. We're looking at possibly whether or not this is a regulatory taking.
Yep.
You know, if the only use of the property is to involving the sale of alcohol, and they completely obliterate the use of it, because we even talked to the city about surrendering the license voluntarily in order to not have this revocation thing kick in to allow subsequent buyer to apply for a license, and they wouldn't even go for that.
Well, and that just makes it just unbelievably punitive, their actions. And if the city council is going to take a business owner to task greater than they're willing to let the police take criminals to task, that's a problem.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I've told... And when I was interviewed yesterday by the reporter, I told her, it wasn't printed in the article, but I said, I have a lot of bar, restaurant, brewery, distillery, winery clients, and if any of them come to me and want to open up in St. Paul, I'm going to tell them to run screaming the other way. You know, you thought Minneapolis was anti-business. St. Paul is a country mile ahead of them.
Yeah. We're going to spend a little more time on this in this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast. Jeff, I believe you're going to be a guest on the show.
I will.
So that'll be a
nice segue, Drew.
Right? Exactly. A little cross plug there. So we'll spend a little more time on this on the Beercast. Make sure to look for that via podcast this week. Just keep an eye on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com or subscribe on your iHeartRadio app. Jeff, you'll be joining us. I look forward to it. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Joining us now, friend of the show, Howard Root.
Hello. Good morning, guys.
Friend of the show, John Gilmore.
Good morning.
Pundit provocateur, John Gilmore.
Okay. I guess that's sticking, Howard. Thanks.
Incendiary provocateur.
Right. Royce Olson named me a provocateur, and you've given me an upgrade.
Yeah, good. You wear well.
Wanted to invite you guys in because I saw competing columns that you guys wrote on Alpha News. for making the case for and against sort of the elephant in the governor's race, the specter of Tim Pawlenty that's been hanging over the race now for a while. I think it's all but confirmed now at this point. It's as confirmed as it can be without Pawlenty coming right out and saying it himself that he is going to get into the race. He is going to seek the endorsement and likely go to a primary if he doesn't get the endorsement.
Well, to be clear, I think it can be safely assumed he's getting into the race. Whether or not he's going to seek the endorsement or not, I think that's a pretty open question.
Yeah, my speculation is he will make a token effort at the endorsement, but if he doesn't get it, he will go on to a primary.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. But, you know, he hasn't made final decisions, but certainly he's met with donors and mm-hmm. he's talking about it, and he's going to figure out what's the right strategy.
And if anyone should know something about being token, it would be Tim Pawlenty.
So this all started with you, John Gilmore.
See, there you go.
You penned a piece called A Nowhere Man, The Case Against Tim Pawlenty, and you write, bad news was delivered last week by NPR when it was reported that failed former governor Tim Pawlenty would meet with donors and supporters to reassess running for governor. Why is he a failed former governor?
Well, I don't think anyone could look back at the 8 years of Tim Pawlenty and say that from a center-right viewpoint, he was particularly accomplished. You can start with the highest electricity rates in the upper Midwest because of his ridiculous climate change and biomass and clean energy. I'll note in passing that when Republicans have a DFL legislature, they tend to be weak, and we have to reach across the aisle and cooperate, which means our agenda, to the extent that we have one, gets hollowed out. But when it's in the reverse, for example, Governor Dayton and a Republican controlled legislature, the reverse is the case. They stand in opposition to that party that controls the legislature. Tim Pawlenty doesn't have anything to run on other than he thinks the current field of gubernatorial candidates didn't raise enough money. Candidly, they didn't. But there is no groundswell of support within the party, within the grassroots or activist community for him, and they're fine with that. They're happy to go around. Those people are sort of necessary nuisances. And I think what Pawlenty's candidacy represents is a hostile takeover of the Republican Party by vested interests who like to have their person in office to advance their agenda. Ask yourself, what has Tim Pawlenty ever done to raise wages for the average Minnesotan working man and working woman? That's not his agenda. That's not the interest that he's serving. That's not who he is.
I would agree with some of what you said, but one aspect in particular regarding the lack of sort of groundswell support. I'm not going to sit here and say that I've got my finger on the pulse of the grassroots activists in the Republican Party, but doing what we do and doing on this show, we interact with a lot of people.
Sure.
We interact with a lot of different elements and different wings of people that are various degrees of political activism. And up until Tim Pawlenty started, you know, making some waves and the rumors started coming out, I never heard anybody say, gosh, you know, sure wish Tim Pawlenty was running again. That would be great. Howard Root, you countered with your piece.
Well,
counterpoint, choices are good. The case for Tim Pawlenty.
Right. I think the problem in politics is that the enemy of good is perfect. Mm. If we were waiting for the perfect candidate, we're going to have to wait till Trey Gowdy moves to Minnesota. And we're not going to get that. Or maybe Tom Cotton. And if you say that the 8 years of Dayton was as bad as the 8 years of Pawlenty, you're just delusional.
Which I didn't say, Howard.
I know. Okay, but okay. I just want to make sure the listeners don't take that impression, because that's what we do. We beat up on people who are coming mm-hmm. into the race saying, you're not perfect, you're not conservative enough, and then we lose the race, and then we have 8 more years of Dayton or 8 more years of Walz.
That's a great point. I mean, principles are great and principles are right. important, but if you don't win the election, your principles are worth about as much change as you can put in your
suddenly
pocket.
Everybody sounds like me for all of 2016 vis-a-vis Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
I mean, if those moron Republicans in Minnesota who voted for Evan McMullen because of their vaunted principles had voted for Trump, he would have carried the state.
Yeah,
I
doesn't matter. He still won.
Well, not Minnesota.
I know.
And that's my point.
He's still the president.
Yeah, and if you have to position Pawlenty in a straw man argument, which is, well, no one's perfect, well, then, you know, knock yourself out. That's not my argument. My argument is that Pawlenty, and I was with Howard on a podcast and Facebook live event. Facebook is hell incarnate. And with Jake Duesenberg and Jack Rogers on Action for Liberty. And I thought about this since then. I mean, I've seen Howard twice in 24 hours. I don't know how his wife does it. But, you know, no. We're actually friends.
He's a delightful man. You take that.
We're actually friends because we've talked about how to model behavior where you disagree about a particular candidate or an important issue, and you remain friends, and you don't make it personal, and you don't burn the house down. Sure. And I think that's important, especially on the right. People
and that's
can't
a conversation that a lot of people are going to have in this election season when it comes to this GOP race.
That's right. If Pawlenty is our guy, I'm in. I'm voting. Mm-hmm. So it's not a matter of making the perfect the enemy of the good. But Howard said yesterday that Pawlenty is a good candidate. And the more I thought about that, the more it just fell apart. There's no evidence for it. He last ran in... Are we going for a break?
No, I was going to give Howard a chance to respond to that. Yeah.
Oh, well, I was trying to run out the clock.
No filibustering allowed here.
Where to begin?
Okay, make the case for Tim Pawlenty being a good candidate.
He won twice, period. Full stop. Okay, Jeff Johnson lost twice, period. Full stop. There is a groundswell of support for a candidate who can win.
Yes.
Pawlenty isn't the most conservative candidate in Minnesota of all, but he is the one who I believe is the best able to win. Now, I'm not a Tim Pawlenty campaign staffer or anything. He's got a lot of things to prove to me. When
Tim
Pawlenty
can't afford you.
future Commissioner of Commerce, I think.
No, no, no.
Future Commissioner of Commerce.
If elected, I will not serve. No. He's got to prove that he can be more conservative. He's got to prove that now, if he's got both branches of legislature, that he'll push a conservative agenda. He's talking about that. I've heard him talk about this, and I think people are going to push him toward that. If we get that, we get a guy who can win and a guy who can govern much better than Dayton. The last 8 years, state spending has gone up by 50%, right, mm-hmm. Nick?
Yes.
For Pawlenty's years, it went up by about 4 to 5% per two-year budget. I mean, that is a huge improvement. That's issue number one. School choice, issue number two. Healthcare, issue number three. Those three are Tim Pawlenty's big three issues. Those I'm 100% for him on. I think that's an important improvement, especially over Tim Walz.
John Gilmore, is Tim Pawlenty the best that Republicans can do to put up there that has a legitimate and really strong chance of winning a statewide election?
Well, I think Pawlenty has every bit as strong a chance as Jeff Johnson or Keith Downey. Your mileage may vary. The idea that he won twice and he barely came across the finish line in 2006 with 46% of the vote, and it was only because Mike Hatch's lieutenant governor running mate didn't know what E85 was, and which kind of warms my heart. Hatch actually called a reporter a whore. I mean, that could probably put him over the finish line now these days, right, with the contempt that we deservedly have for the media. There's the premise that the Pawlenty supporters want you to take, but they haven't proven it yet. So don't let them get away with this. And that is, he can win. He has enormous luggage. Closets full of baggage.
For example?
Well, if you go to City Pages, not exactly my reading material of choice, but because you know your enemy. It's like when you read the New York Times. Know your enemy. And they've got an article out yesterday called Tim Pawlenty's Triumphant Return from Pimping for Wall Street. My point is we can already see how they're going to message against this candidate. I'm not asking you to agree with the merits of the argument. So elevate it, 1,000 feet from the battlefield, Nick. That's my only point.
Yeah.
I know the attacks on the rich. You know, Howard's my token rich friend. And, you know, I know how the left, demagogues, but we have to be ready for it. If you pull out the, interviews that Pawlenty had when he ran last, which was for president, he's deer in the headlights. I've seen no evidence that working for the interests of the corporate global elite in Manhattan has made him a better candidate. The evidence doesn't exist. I hope it's true, but there's no evidence.
Well, to say that the Financial Services Roundtable is the global elite is just wrong. I mean, that's the group that has all the banks, like Klein Bank, which is getting attacked by this state and trying to be driven out of business.
It may be wrong, but... Is it? But they're still going to use it.
They use it like
the fact that it's wrong isn't going to stop them from running with it and stop a big portion of the electorate from believing it.
But that's the problem. This isn't ignoring the lessons of Trump. There was a lot of things that went after Trump on, and Trump just beat him back. Now Pawlenty is not Trump, but I think he can
not
use
Trump. Do you want to? I can quote from memory what he said about Trump.
We can go into that as well.
Yeah.
But the thing that causes Republicans to lose in this state is when they are ignored. And if you don't have people attacking you, nobody knows who you are. And that's what I fear is with this gubernatorial candidate, with Jeff Johnson, with Keith Downey, with whoever it is, they will be ignored, they will not have the money, they will not get attacked, and they will not win.
And so to that end, and John, I'm interested in your take on this. We have seen an unbelievably disappointing fundraising year for Republican gubernatorial candidates.
Sure.
In which most major donors said, we've already committed to Tim Pawlenty. So how can a Jeff Johnson with $100,000 in the bank compete against a Tim Walz with over $1 million in the bank?
We will answer that question after the break. We'll get into the fundraising aspect, because I think that's a really important part of this overall conversation as well, with John Gilmore, Howard Root, Nick Zerwas in for John Justice. Plus, we want your calls as well. 651-989-5855. You want to get in on this conversation. We'll be right back.
Justice Inc. Radio is the easy-to-use app for music and radio. Download the free iHeartRadio app today.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew rolls on. We've got in studio Representative Nick Zerwas filling the role of John Justice this morning, who's a little under the weather.
What's happening?
Howard Root, friend of the show, author of Cardiac Arrest.
Good morning.
Almost a federal felon. So close.
Off on a technicality.
Yeah, I'm always here when there's no justice. Always here with no justice.
See?
We almost had you.
Yeah.
Well played.
And John Gilmore, pundit provocateur.
Hey, I'm the author of Bach Monistan.
Oh,
yeah. Yes, indeed.
Awesome.
That's cheap on Kindle.
It is.
I got a lot of one-star reviews because her fans didn't like what I had to say, but somebody has to tell the truth, and here I am.
We're
on Kindle. I love that.
Debating the pros and cons of a Tim Pawlenty run for governor, with John Gilmore making the argument that we don't need any more Pawlenty in this state, and Howard Root saying choices are good, and Tim Pawlenty stands a good chance of becoming our next governor.
Except that, Andrew, with respect, I'm not really saying that he shouldn't run. I agree with my friend Howard. More choices are better. My original column posited that he would get no traction for a litany of reasons in that column. That's my concern. And that they foreshadowed how he would be set up in the general election I think he's a toxic candidate. I don't think he can unite the Republicans, and I don't think he can appeal to people who may be tired of Mark Dayton, but see politics as usual, and somebody parachuting in.
To those people,
yeah.
The other option is going to be Tim Walz. So it's not like they're going to have some outsider non-establishment candidate to choose from. If they look at Tim Pawlenty and say, oh gosh, look, another politician, politics as usual, I'm going to go vote for Tim Walz.
In an authenticity contest, I think between the two of them, I know which one could do it better, and they'd both have to fake it.
Well, yeah, so let me summarize Gilmore's argument.
Now. Oh, no, I'm right here. I can do it.
I'll do it.
Thank you,
Because he likes to summarize mine.
One, this is what we're doing, Your Honor.
Pawlenty,
the other side.
I got to hit the off button there. Pawlenty should run, he says, right? And Pawlenty should try to prove his case. We don't have a presumptive candidate. We don't have a Donald Trump. We don't have a Trey Gowdy. We don't have anyone who's going to run the field, and we don't have anyone who's going to raise enough money to go against Walz.
Correct.
All right, so we agree 100%. Let Tim Pawlenty prove his case, and there's one thing he has to do. He has to prove that he's not going to run presidential Tim Pawlenty campaign, but Governor Tim Pawlenty campaign. Talk about Minnesota. Stick to the issues. Be conservative. And prove that if he has both branches of legislature and the governors, that he will have a conservative agenda. If he can do that, I'm voting for him. If he doesn't do that, you know, Jeff Johnson may be the guy that gets it, and he's going to be the guy I'm going to vote for.
Let's talk about the fundraising angle of it real quickly. Tim Walz is going to have... Let's all operate under the assumption that Tim Walz is the DFL nominee. Obviously, you know, that remains to be seen, but let's move
forward. We could look out, and it could be Rebecca Hotto.
We could be running...
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. That would be amazing. But let's all assume, for the sake of argument, that it's Walz. He's going to show up with millions of dollars, ready to, you know, cannons full of money to fire at this race. From that aspect, would you concede, John Gilmore, that for just simply from a fundraising aspect, that you're better equipped to combat a Tim Walz run with a candidate like Pawlenty, who's going to show up with a war chest that will eclipse Jeff Johnson's on day one?
No, I think that's a fatal flaw in that premise, which is we should go with the person who has the most money. That didn't work out particularly well with Mike McFadden. And so the premise that somebody like Pawlenty could theoretically raise more money, which wouldn't necessarily guarantee a win, shouldn't be the be-all and end-all of considerations for who you want to be the standard bearer. He might want to have some association with Minnesota, other than being a has-been. He's not been in the state since he left in 2010. He hasn't done anything for Republicans in Minnesota. He hasn't helped retire the party debt. Where's all this money? Yesterday, Howard said, well, he was working for the Financial Services Roundtable and couldn't be political. They have a profoundly political agenda. And that's going to be pointed out in spades by all the positions that the FSB, FSR, took during his tenure. And again, it's not a matter of somebody making money, but when you talk about funding these races, it's very interesting, Nick Zaros, before we went to break, you ask the people in the campaign now, they go to the Minnesota Business Partnership, and those people say, well, we can't do anything before the endorsement. So the moneyed interest starve the field, then they launch their preferred moneyed candidate. It's a sham.
So the money part of the Republican Party didn't starve the field. The field did not persuade the moneyed class to give them money. And, you know, to be critical of Jeff Johnson, the campaign ads he ran last time were embarrassing. And if we do that again, we're not going to win. So it's not that money is the be-all, end-all, but
you have to have money.
You
were compelled when he took out the scissors and the ruler to cut his grass?
Yeah, and it was just, that was it.
That was painful.
I mean, it's you know, from a businessman's perspective of politics, what they miss is the emotional connection. There's got to be a message that resonates in the human as to why this person is who I want. That's what Pawlenty can do. We'll see if he's able to do it once he announces.
651-995-8855. Got a few people that want to chime in. Mike from St. Paul. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, my comment is, you know, I've always lived by the adage, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And for you guys to be ripping on a very viable candidate in Tim Pawlenty without offering somebody better.
There's only one person here ripping on him.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Oh, God.
I mean, Jeff Johnson signed in my yard last time around. You got to understand, I'm surrounded, the majority of my neighborhood are socialists, and I'm not exaggerating.
I live in St. Paul, I agree.
So give me somebody else. If you don't have anybody, then Tim Pawlenty, then please keep your mouth quiet and be part of the team. And let's create a winner. Otherwise,
yeah, that's a good point.
Well, and
John Gilmore, I'll throw this at you.
Bizarre.
If not Pawlenty, then we'll put John Gilmore in charge of the Minnesota GOP here.
No, you don't.
No. We put you in charge for one day, and you get to decide the candidate and the strategy going forward. To be fair, it is easy to sort of sit on the sidelines and throw the bombs and say they're doing everything wrong when you're not in the arena trying to actually solve the problem.
If I understand the caller, no disrespect to Steve from St. Paul, from where I hail, having to travel 5:30 in the morning to some ghastly suburb. Look, he's not even in the race yet, and apparently we're being told we can't criticize him because we all need to fall in behind him because he has the money. Am I getting this right? Is that really the narrative?
No,
because
that's not
how it works. I mean, that's not how it works at all. And I've already said I'm supporting Pawlenty if he gets the endorsement. It's still a chance he could make a serious effort. And some people think he would get traction. I don't know. Not going to be a delegate, not going to be an alternate. I'll be watching. And if he wins the primary, I'm certainly all in. So I think my bona fides in wanting a Republican governor are fairly well established. I'm looking at him as being damaged goods, a retread, a blast from the past, and a target-rich environment from the left, which, with their money, he'll be on defense his entire campaign.
Can you not say all those things about Jeff Johnson?
I don't think to the same extent, because he wasn't governor. I mean, you know, you can say that
because he lost his governor race. Yeah, you could say one.
Well, it took John Klein three times to get to Congress.
This is a
what's the limit? What's the limit?
It took John Klein redistricting.
Yeah.
To get to Congress.
Point taken.
So this is a vision test. It's A or B, as a caller said. You know, and I my point in my column. You know, perfect is the enemy of good. If you don't have a better candidate,
support the
one who's going to win. Why is that a straw man? It's an election. We have to win. It's an important election.
Because nobody is jonesing for a perfect candidate. So it's a straw man.
No, it's the opposite. If you don't have someone better, don't attack the best one in the race.
Well, if he's our nominee, I would agree.
All right, good.
Dave Santiago. Go ahead, Dave.
Good morning. Wow, this is a lively debate with us, Johnny. One of the things that I'd like to, you know, bounce off you guys is, okay, say we go up to Duluth, do the convention, and say Mary Giuliani picks up the endorsement over, you know, all the other candidates. I'm just throwing this up.
Sure. Hypothetical.
I'm not backing anyone yet. And so Pawlenty has his little tantrum, and he says, well, I'm going to run in the primary. So he runs in the primary, wins the primary. Now, your grassroots base, the people who are out there doing and having to do all the work, you know, what does that say to them? It's like, well, everything you've done up to this point is moot. And, you know, just, you know, here you go. Start backing Tim. And so you have to just suck up, bite your tongue, and grudgingly go on because that's now the endorsed candidate.
Howard?
Well, we have to see what happens there, but it didn't hurt the Democrats. Dayton didn't get the endorsement. He ran in the primary and won, and everyone fell in line. The Republicans have this litmus test that you must get endorsed in order to run. I don't think that's healthy. Getting endorsed is going to be a big plus. Whoever gets that will be the presumptive candidate, and someone coming in a primary has got to make the case to put that person aside for the non-endorsed candidate. That would be a big hill to climb. If Pawlenty gets in, I would encourage him to go for the endorsement,
yep.
But I wouldn't say that if he doesn't get endorsed, he doesn't run the primary, because I want to give everyone the choice of whether that's the best candidate for the Republican Party.
We agree on that point, but here's a thought experiment. Pawlenty loses the primary. Does he stick around Minnesota to help conservatives? No, he leaves.
I don't think he leaves.
Okay.
Yeah.
John Gilmore, Howard Root, this was a lot of fun, very lively, and unfortunately we are out of time. I'm sad. There's a lot more we could get to on.
I'm guest hosting for Sue Jeffers on Saturday, March 3rd, because she will have just been off a Supreme Court oral argument in which she is a named plaintiff, and she'll be at the Reagan Library on a panel with the Pacific Legal Foundation. It's their 40th or 45th anniversary.
And on a week from today, we will have Sue Jeffers on the morning show to talk about
that case. Outstanding.
Awesome. She is. Sue Jeffers is going to be in front of the Supreme Court. I weep for the future.
Our Lady of the Air.
I weep for the Supreme Court.
Supreme Court.
She's getting
Our Lady of the Airwaves.
Ginsburg's going to get called an idiot. Some point in that whole thing, she's going to yell idiot at Ginsburg.
I'm afraid she's going to shoot rubber bands.
Thank you so much, guys, for coming
thanks,
in.
That
was thanks very much. It was fun.
All right, we're going to get into the tragic shooting down in Florida. Got some more information, some more details to share with you. Plus, we're going to talk to Brian Strasser from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. David Gartenstein-Ross is going to talk school security efforts with us at 8 o'clock. Stick around. This is... Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Just wrapping up with John Gilmore and Howard Root. That was a lot of fun. That was good.
Yeah,
was good.
I'll tell you what. We got to find more things they disagree on.
Yeah, I'm gonna stir that pot. I think pretty regularly, because I think that could be a fun bit. We were talking about the Pawlenty entering the governor's race. If you missed any portion of it, get the iHeartRadio app, download it, subscribe to the Justice and Drew channel, and pick that up on podcast, because that was a good time. We're going to get back into, obviously, the big news of the morning, the tragic shooting down in Florida. Another school shooting taking place in Florida. It's becoming a headline that we're seeing far too often. Suspected gunman Nicholas Cruz, former student, was expelled from the school, showed up yesterday, allegedly pulled a fire alarm to get the people evacuating their classrooms, and 17 people killed, many others wounded and injured in the shooting yesterday. And of course, when things like this happen, you know, we end up having very similar conversations every time. There's always an element of people that rush out to stake out, you know, political ground and political angles on these things. There's the usual suspects calling for the usual gun control that, unfortunately, you know, the problem with 99% of what those folks advocate is, when you look at the facts around these cases, it's hard to find any policy that they're pushing for that would have been effective in preventing or mitigating.
Well, and I just
like this,
you know, I know this is kind of a tired thing to say, but I, quite frankly, am really over the idea of politicians and political groups running to the floor of their respective elected chambers or sending out emails with an overt, direct attempt to politicize tragedy.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it's, and it's said every time, so I'm not unique or groundbreaking in saying that, but I heard from people that got multiple fundraising pleas yesterday.
And that's really gross.
To be clear, to be 100% clear and a little bit direct and pointed, those 17 bodies, or at least the ones in the school, are likely still this morning in place. And so the idea that those bodies are still lying there, the victim of a mass murderer, the victim of a mentally deranged individual, and that their deaths were immediately used for political advancement and financial advancement, is really morbid and really disturbed. And it's something that we ought to just be able to come together and say, no, that's not okay. That's not an okay response.
Yeah. If your reaction and the left and Democrats have done a remarkable job in politicizing this phenomenon altogether, because so many people's immediate reaction to something like this is, we've got to vote Republicans out, as if simply electing more Democrats is going to take away the phenomenon that is these school shootings that have become a real problem. I mean, there's no denying that there's an issue here regarding school shootings at schools. Joining us now, Brian Strasser from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on. I was appreciating you on social media yesterday. I really was. I thought you were doing a very nice job of responding to the typical sort of calls that you get from a lot of Democrat politicians when something like this happens. A lot of them will run to social media and say, the time for thoughts and prayers is over. We need to take action. We need to do something. We need common sense gun legislation. And you had pretty much a stock response to everybody that says, okay, you know, what are you proposing? What would you propose that would have prevented what happened down in Florida today? Did you get any response from anybody?
Well, not really. I mean, I messaged that to all of the sitting DFL candidates for governor because they all posted something yesterday. None of them responded, of course. Several state legislators from the DFL, none of them responded. There was response from former Representative Kim Norton, who had introduced some crazy gun control bills in her last term, that her answer was to ban AR-15s and then went on to, you know, magazine restrictions. And as you mentioned a moment ago, Andrew, it's the same tripe that we continue to hear. It's the failed gun control strategies that we saw in the 1990s.
You went on, though. I mean, it's a conversation that needs to happen, and you kind of touched on it yesterday. Of it's one thing to do that and to ask for specific policy proposals that these people think would be effective, but it's another thing to, you know, if you're on the pro Second Amendment side, if you're on the side of saying that, you know, more gun control isn't the answer, it's also, I think, incumbent upon those on that side to offer solutions. You know, it's much like the conversation we were having with regarding Tim Pawlenty in the last couple segments. It's easy to sit on one side and say that everybody else on the other side is wrong. It's another thing, though, to actually start to offer up some solutions. And this is something that your group has been very active in reaching out to police departments and things like that to talk about ways to make, you know, to make the culture around us a bit safer. Can you address that? You went on a very good thread on Twitter yesterday. Can you kind of summarize that for me?
Sure. You know, I think there was a fair challenge from a friend of mine on the left that, hey, you're challenging a lot of people about their ideas. What are yours? And I think you're right in that it's incumbent on all of us to say, okay, are there solutions to this issue that we should put out into the public policy sphere and not be afraid to have a conversation. I think we're certainly not afraid to engage in that kind of rational discussion. I don't know that the day of a major tragedy like this is really the day to do it, but the left is going to do it anyway. So I think we're the responsible thing to do is to engage in that debate in a rational and calm manner. You know, I think we're certainly interested in approaching legislation and policies that protect law-abiding citizens, that reinforce the constitutional right to keep and bear arms, but reduces the likelihood of incidents like this from occurring. We don't think the answer in driving that is banning AR-15s or magazine restrictions, which have been shown not to be effective. But there is answer in how do you provide greater access to mental health care? How do we make sure that some of these warning signs and actions can be taken when there's an actual threat? And I think we're going to learn as this investigation continues that, you know, there was leakage. There were warning signs that were entirely missed or maybe not acted upon.
Yeah, that's a good response, and that's certainly fair. And I do appreciate the fact that your group specifically and you guys do spend a lot of time working on that particular angle. One of the things that I get frustrated about is the response from so many, you know, of we just got to do something. You know, this is a problem, and the Republicans and the NRA, they don't want to do anything about it. We got to do something, yet can't really come up with it. If they could come up with something that doesn't, you know, restrict the people's Second Amendment rights and would be, I think, an effective measure, I mean, I'd get all behind it, but I have yet to see that particular proposal.
Right, and of course, the definition of protecting the Second Amendment right differs between the anti-gun groups and folks on our side from a gun rights perspective. They don't see an assault weapons ban or magazine restrictions as you know, infringing upon an individual's right to keep and bear arms. We do. So there's a fundamental
yes.
you know, difference of opinion, or even the definition of gun safety. I think every anti-gun group nationally and locally has rebranded themselves as a gun safety organization. But if you were to ask them in a place where they couldn't escape from you, escape the question, what gun safety training have you had? What are your credentials to teach that? They don't have that at all. So certainly there's a wide gulf of difference in opinion on how to address the issue.
Do you have any engagement from the DFL politicians, those on the left that do want to push for more gun control? When you reach out to them, do any of them actually engage you and want to have, you know, some substantive conversations and discussions about policies that maybe you guys could come to some agreement on?
Yeah, I mean, there are some that I think we certainly differ personally on politics, but I think our, you know, their head's in the right place. We just don't agree on the answer. I'll mention Senator Jeff Hayden in Minneapolis. I don't know that Senator Hayden and I agree on anything politically, but he's, you know, he lost a niece to gun violence, and he's been very mm-hmm. passionate about obtaining funding through the Minnesota Department of Health to study gun violence. You know, I'm fearful that would be politicized and would go to anti-gun groups kind of disguising themselves as research organizations. But at least he's put out a specific policy proposal and reached out last year when he introduced the bill to engage on, hey, could you get behind this? We declined the opportunity, but at least there's engagement, right? As opposed to, say, Tina Liebling, Representative Liebling, who's running for governor, who sends us nasty grams in the mail about how hateful and fearful, you know, how much fear we generate, and that helps us win elections.
Yeah, and I think, Brian, one of the things that I keep seeing after inevitably every one of these tragedies is what must be at some level a concerted effort to put out misinformation. And we saw multiple folks put out misinformation yesterday about the fact that this was an automatic weapon, and that in America it's very easy for anyone to buy an automatic weapon. And that is just so patently false and inaccurate. Well, what can supporters of Second Amendment rights do to push back on such blatant misinformation that helps advance the cause of really the Second Amendment and making sure that we're at least dealing with accurate information when we have the debate?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great challenge, Nick. I think there's two key things that supporters should do. The first is, and I think this needs to be done in a rational, polite
yes,
manner,
yes.
understanding the tragedy that just occurred
exactly.
and how that impacts people. But I think you have to push back with facts. You brought up the automatic weapon issue. I can't remember how many times that we've had to address that in the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I think pushing back factually is important, particularly if you, using a single tragedy to drive a political agenda, legislative agenda, is bad. You need to look at the holistic issue around violence involving firearms and what does that mean, and acknowledge that it's down 50% over the last 25 years. Second is, I think that gun owners and supporters have to get engaged in the political process. I think a lot of folks in Minnesota in particular feel safe on the gun rights issue right now because we have GOP majorities in the House and Senate, and a very strong majority in the House, one vote majority in the Senate, but they need to be engaged. We had hearings on pro-gun legislation last year. We had three or four people there. The other side filled the room.
Yeah.
And we need to show that enthusiasm and support at rallies, at protests, at legislative hearings, and so on. They need to be engaged with groups like the NRA and ourselves and others.
Brian, we got a couple of callers online. You want to hang on and take a couple calls with us?
Sure.
All right. Ron in St. Paul. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah. My feeling is no more debates, no new laws. Nothing's ever going to change in these school shootings until teachers are authorized to carry guns. And schools are soft targets.
We're going to address that angle of schools being soft targets in our next segment with our guest David Gartenstein Ross, because I do think that's an angle that is under discussed, is what can we be doing at our schools to make them less of a target. There's a reason why someone who wants to go and commit atrocities doesn't show up at police stations.
Yeah, to be fair, for someone that wants to hurt, kill, or maim, we've seen across Europe and now across the United States the incidents of people taking a van or a pickup truck or a car, driving it on a sidewalk, driving it down a pedestrian pathway, and just running people over.
Yeah.
So the options and different ways for people to commit mass murder and hurt multiple people, we're seeing in Europe and now in America, we're seeing people use multiple avenues in order to create this type of chaos. And the caller's right. The school is very much a soft target of high impact.
We got time for one more call. Nick from Princeton. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. All of a sudden, you guys magically started proving my point. I agree with Ron that somebody in the school really needs to be armed, whether we are putting police officers, retired military into the schools, or arming the teachers. The guns are never the problem. You went right to it after that. Now, if they want to hurt somebody, they will find the means to do it.
Yeah.
Whether it's trucks, anything.
And that's a cultural conversation. There's something broken in the culture right now that needs to be addressed. I don't have the answer to what it is, but removing one tool that a person can have access to cause these sorts of atrocities isn't necessarily the answer. Brian Strasser, thank you so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you.
And I know this has
not
been
a, not a bad guy for a Patriots fan.
Fair enough. Oh, I can't believe I didn't. Well, it's probably not the right time. I should have ripped on him a little bit for that. Hey, Brian, if you're still listening, your team sucks. Just wanted to make sure we get that in there.
Wow.
No, I think the other thing that was talked about quite a bit at one point, but I think we've gotten away from it, is what is the media's role for these mass shootings in the inevitable glorification, lack of a better word.
Yeah, that's
comes.
A tough one.
You and I know.
That's a tough one.
I'm here filling in for John in the belly of the beast, talking about the role. But I'll tell you what. Why, after all of these, do we go to their Twitter profile or their Facebook profile and find the picture where they look really scary holding the gun?
I know. We'll touch on that a little bit later. We do have David Gartenstein Ross joining us next, and we're going to talk about school safety, school security, and
huge role in this. Huge
steps
role
that we need to be taking and should be taking in our public schools to mitigate and prevent and respond to these types of incidents. David Gartenstein Ross joining us next. Justice and Truth.